And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
I'm here, so...
I'm Shea Gibbs-Alexander, and I'm down to dunk.
Howdy, Oklahoma.
My name is Chet Holmgren, and I'm down to dunk.
Dead gum.
I'm Josh Giddey, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Lou Dort,
and I'm down to dunk.
Is that like you eat it together?
Everybody tells him to get the bag of burgers.
I need like a straw. Like.
Howdy. I'm an artist on the court.
This is Jay Will, and I'm down to dunk.
My name is Kendrick Williams, and I'm down to dunk.
It might be Aaron Wiggins.
This is a troll. It's a troll. I'm trolling.
Howdy, Papa.
Because I think it would take away from who he is, you know?
Yeah. I love Oklahoma. I love Oklahoma to death.
This is Lou Dort, and I'm down to Dort.
Perfect. Good. Very good.
I like the hat.
You like the hat? Yeah.
Vava.
This is J-Dub, and I'm down to dunk. I've been doing a lot of dunking.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schlechter, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. With me, as always, on Wednesdays, is my good friend, Alex Spears. Alex, what's up?
What's up, Andrew? Sky's falling.
Sky is falling, but it is a beautiful day in OKC.
It?
Yeah,
are you
man.
On? Well, how nice.
It's great. It's been great
how
here.
Nice.
You know, it would have made more sense for the sky to be falling weather-wise last week when, like, literally we didn't see the sun in Oklahoma for, like, 6 days. It was so depressing. But now the sky's falling for the Thunder. The injury report came out yesterday, and it was lengthy.
Loaded.
It'll be interesting to see who actually plays tonight, but for sure, J-Dub out with the right ankle sprain. Isaiah Joe out with a sternum contusion. You could see him after the play, my chest. And then Shea, Dort, Chet are all questionable tonight. So I don't know. I mean, it's possible that they all play. You know, or maybe one or two of them play tonight. So we'll see. But they play Denver, and Jokic is questionable with some low back pain. So that could make things interesting. But also, we know weird things can happen in games like this. You know, I think about the Celtics game from, was that last year? I think it was last year, where the Thunder just destroyed the Celtics without Shea, and it was like the full squad Celtics. So you never know what's going to happen. I think a lot of people are just counting this as a loss. I think a lot of people counted that Celtics game as a loss too. So you never know what will happen. But the Thunder
they haven't lost three in a row, Andrew.
I know
they need to stave it off.
Yeah, but I mean the month of January has been brutal, and you could see it on all of their faces the other night. I mean, they just looked completely gassed. And like finishing out this month tonight, they had 5 back-to-backs this month, which is the most for any team, 11 road games, which is the most for any single month this season. And then they'll have their 17th game tonight, which is the max number of games that you can have in a month. So it's a brutal month. A lot of it is due to the in-season tournament and the way that they had to work the schedule after that. But it was a brutal month for the Thunder. And I think maybe like two other teams had 17 games this month. So it's not just the Thunder that are dealing with it, but they're one of the teams that like got hit the hardest as far as schedule goes. And you could see it. I mean, Chet looked like he had taken like 5 melatonin or something before the game. He just looked slower. He looked just completely gassed. Like he just didn't have a whole lot left. And so to me, would it be the worst thing in the world if that guy got a little bit of rest? I don't think so. Shea, if Shea's healthy, Shea looked really good against the Timberwolves. I thought he played well. And then Dort's just kind of in a funk. I thought he played fine defensively, but just in a shooting funk that was awful the other night. But we'll see. Thoughts on injuries?
Yeah, even if they lose this game, they'd still finish this month 10-7.
Yeah.
Which, all things considered, pretty good.
Yeah, really
pretty
good.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
And that's with, some that awful loss to Detroit in there.
Mm-hmm.
The bad loss to Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, Atlanta. Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, 10-7, considering how many games they had to play, all the back-to-backs, everything you just said, pretty good. Pretty good. They've maintained about where they were in the standings at the beginning of the month. Mm-hmm. That's all you can really ask for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that gap that is widening kind of between the top four seeds and the rest of the Western Conference, which right now is at 3 games, the difference between the Kings at 5 and the Clippers at 4, you know, you still feel pretty good about that. You know, you could see Phoenix making a run, but the rest of these teams, I'm not like super concerned that they're going to overtake the Thunder. I'm more worried about like the Clippers. I do think the Clippers could be the one seed by the end of the season.
Yeah, if they stay healthy.
So it wouldn't shock me if OKC finished 4th, but that would still be a huge success.
Yeah, because I mean, it'll probably be like 50 plus wins, you know, everything that comes with that, you know. Yeah, I mean, the West is still really, really tough. And that's just the way that it is. And the Thunder still have, you know, the best point differential in the Western Conference. And, you know, once you get to February, things lighten up a lot. And they even have 3 days off before the All-Star break. So they're going to be like pretty well rested coming out of the All-Star break. And
it seems like Mark will be well rested now. He's not going to have to go.
You wonder if he's like silently just like fist pumping, like, yes, like I'm not, I don't have to go to Indianapolis at all.
I have to imagine. Hey, by the way, did they announce any Thunder players for the Rising Stars yet? I see all these other teams.
Yeah.
Who made it?
Yeah. I mean, who do you think made it?
Was it Chet, J-Dub, and Kaysen?
Yeah. Yeah, all 3 made it.
Okay, cool.
It was pretty cool. They did this thing where they announced it yesterday at like 4 p.m. Central, I think, or 3 p.m. Central. And they did this thing like an hour before where they put out who the Rising Stars were going to be, but didn't put the names out, but just put their baby pictures out.
Oh, man, how did I miss all this?
You missed all the baby pictures? So you can
I love trying to match baby pictures to their grown faces.
Hey, you know
it's
what?
So fun.
Yep.
Were they really obvious?
I mean, the Chet one is outrageously obvious. Yeah. And then, like, the J-Dub one is as well. Like, you can, like, really see it in his face. The Kaysen one, after you see it kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah, those 3 will be in the Rising Stars. You know, as of now, they have 4 participants in the All-Star weekend, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, they better pick Isaiah Joe, huh?
I mean, they better.
They better do it.
I mean, you think they would? I mean, they have. I mean, he wants to do it, which is a challenge from year to year, just to get guys that
He's
want
a
to
huge
do it.
Star. Everyone knows Isaiah
Everyone
Joe.
Everyone knows and loves Isaiah Joe. He is an NBA player, which is apparently a struggle for the slam dunk contest to get. Just like NBA guys, so like just let Isaiah Joe do it. You get a representative
and plus
the Thunder.
I know, like in recent years, it's been more common for them to have like legit stars in the 3-point contest.
Mm-hmm.
But the history of the contest is like a lot of just random shooters from around the league.
Yeah,
which is cool. I mean, you should always have like Steph and the stars who are like really elite shooters. But I'm pretty sure like Joe Harris was it, like those type of guys.
Yeah.
I like when they're in it.
Yeah. So
that's their whole deal.
So the winners, let's see. Since 2000, let's go back to 2005. All right.
Quentin. Oh, wow.
Quentin Richardson, Dirk Nowitzki, Jason Capone won it 2 years in a row. That's like your classic, like rando shooter mm-hmm. guy. Daquan Cook.
Yeah. Oh, shout out.
He's another one of those guys. Paul Pierce won it. James Jones, Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving won it in 2013. Marco Bellinelli won it in 14. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, back to back 15-16. Eric Gordon won it in 2017. Devin Booker, 18. Joe Harris, 19. Buddy Hield, 20. Steph, 21. Towns, 22. And Lillard won it last year. In his,
that's a nice mix.
Yeah, it is a nice mix. There's a lot of big names. 04 of Bashawn Leonard. It's like your classic, just like
Leonard.
Tim Legler won it in 96.
Legs. Legs.
Yeah. Just let Isaiah shoot it. Just let the boy shoot it. Come on.
That's all we really want.
Come on. That way, that'd be five. And I thought that Mark would give them a chance to have six participants, but I don't think that's going to happen now. Which is fine. But yeah. Thoughts on the Wolves game, the Thunder loss. It was a battle. It was a game where it's interesting that game happened this week because the conversation is all about scoring. It's all about the points. It's all about, you know, is the league out of control? Is there no defense? Is the league legislated defense out? And then you watch that game and you're like, nope, they have not legislated defense out of the game. It was a highly physical game, hard fought. Great defense from both teams almost the whole night.
Yeah, if a lot of people want this to be a rivalry really bad.
Yeah.
Which they're gonna have to meet in the playoffs for that to ever happen. Yeah. But it does remind me of the OKC Memphis of old.
Yeah.
Where you have this team now. I think these teams are closer in talent than those teams were. I mean, back then you felt going in like OKC is always going to be like the overwhelming favorite mm-hmm. against Memphis, mm-hmm. but you also knew that it was going to be miserable in some ways to watch because it was going to be so gritty and grindy.
Yeah.
And these games kind of mirror that, which is fun. Like, yeah, they lost. And I think the end of that game was really interesting, but overall, it was a really entertaining game. Mm-hmm. Like these teams are incredibly well matched with each other, mm-hmm. and kind of exploit different things about each other. I mean, I think the first thing to point out is the turnovers, because that has been the story in the previous three games, and it just wasn't the story on Monday night. Mm-hmm. In all of the three previous meetings, Minnesota turned it over on about 20% of their possessions.
Yeah,
I think the lowest was like 19.5% their turnover percentage. And on Monday, it was 13.8%.
Yeah.
So there was this huge gap compared to the previous games, both in terms of turnovers, where I guess there wasn't a huge gap in terms of turnovers. And then the points off of turnovers, it was a huge difference. Like in the three previous games, OKC was plus 9, plus 11, plus 20 in points off of turnovers. Monday night, minus 3. So like if they lose that part of the game, it makes it just the margin of error becomes really, really small against a team like that,
mm-hmm.
because you know that you're going to struggle offensively. Mm-hmm. Like it's just kind of hard to not struggle offensively against Minnesota. They did have that one game where they kind of like blew them out and they had a great shooting night. But you look at all those other three games, two of which they won, or I guess only one of the other ones that they won, but all three of the other games were close. And you look at their like shooting accuracy, and especially in the mid-range, they were just under their average for the season dramatically.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because they're actually having them that's where they're pushing them to take shots.
Mm-hmm.
Like Minnesota's really good at limiting rim attempts.
Mm-hmm.
In every meeting this year, OKC has been held below their average in terms of percentage of shots at the rim. they do such a great job of that. And as a result, I think they take more shots in the mid-range, and they're just not as good, because like when you are trying to shoot a mid-range shot over like Jaden McDaniels or Rudy Gobert, it's just a lot tougher. And so even some of those shots where it felt like, okay, that's a shot that Shea or J-Dub might normally make.
Yeah.
Even on those shots, the degree of difficulty was a little bit higher than it would be against your average team. I just think that Minnesota, and they're the number one defense for a reason, but like they're just so well set up to try to guard OKC. Mm-hmm. And Shea can still have great games. He can still be good. Like we've seen J-Dub, he can still be good. But man, they are just really tough to play. And then you add in how they're guarding Giddy. That just makes it so much harder. Like it was hard for them to score offensively back when they were just guarding them straight up.
Yeah.
You know, with Gobert on Chet. Mm-hmm. And so you add this new wrinkle in and it just is, it's a grind.
Yeah.
Like there's so much ISO, so much like having to take these tough mid-range shots, and some nights they're going to make them, but yeah, Minnesota's just a really good defensive matchup, or I guess bad defensive matchup for OKC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they made 40% of their threes, which is good, but also there were just a lot of wide open shots that they just missed that you thought, especially from Dort. Like if Dort just hits 2 out of 6, which would feel like normal. I mean, that's the game, you know, like that ties the game. I mean, they didn't lose by a ton. It felt like it at the end. It felt like, oh my gosh, they just got killed. But it was really just like the last couple of minutes. I thought they were like really in this game for the most part, despite, you know, having Giddy and Dort playing really poorly. I credit Mark for recognizing and changing it up pretty quickly when he saw like the way that they were defending Giddy and Dort, whereas like the bigs, both their bigs were on those guys. And it was just like, boy, like that, it's really, that makes it really, really tough, because then you get like the cross matching and you saw it where Giddy shot that floater at the rim and missed it. And then there was like this weird, it makes like the cross matching can make it tough to get back on defense, because now Giddy has to like shift over, and you could tell like he was going a little bit slow, but then he ends up basically setting a screen on Dort for Ant Edwards, who just gets around to the rim and just scores with ease. And part of that is like cross matching is tough in those scenarios. And it wasn't long after that that Mark pulled the plug and brought in other guys to play with Dub, and he pulled Chet too, because Chet was not himself in that game. He was missing short, like he looked just exhausted. He still played well, you know, defensively at times, but offensively, it was just like he was hesitant.
I was going to say,
it was just
like both he and Dort, and Chet, especially in the first half, I thought Chet was like awesome defensively.
Yeah, on defense, he was pretty good.
Like he had multiple like highlight plays of like swallowing guys up at the rim.
Mm-hmm.
That I just thought he looked really good. And then, on offense, it was almost like a flashback to that first Wolves game of the season.
Yeah.
Where the conversation coming out of that was like, man, Chet just like looked uncomfortable. He looked a little unsure of himself in terms of like how to attack Rudy. Now Rudy wasn't on him for a lot of this game, but it felt kind of similar in that he just was hesitant. I mean, right from that start, that open three that he had, where he's just wide open and he doesn't take it.
I know.
And then he drives on Minnesota of all teams. It's like nothing good is going to happen here. Yeah. Like there's too many. They're all hanging out around the rim.
Just take the shot.
He has to cut that out of his shot diet, or put it into his shot diet.
But then
similar with Dort, like Dort was terrible offensively.
Yeah.
But I thought he was really good on Anthony Edwards.
He is good on Ant. Yeah.
That is a really good matchup for him, because as I'm watching the game, I'm like, man, there just aren't that many times when Ant scored on Dort. And actually one of the plays was the one you just mentioned where Giddy like basically set a screen on Dort and Ant was able to get around. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much people trust the like NBA tracking data, but they have it as when Dort was his primary defender, which was the majority of the game, Ant only scored 5 of his points against Dort. Mm-hmm. And that's how it felt rewatching that game. Like he did not have a huge game against Dort. Dort was really good. It was always when he was matched up against like J-Dub or Shea or someone else on the team where he was actually able to rack up his points.
Yeah.
I thought Dort was really good on Ant. And that's when we start getting into like this bigger discussion of like, you know, guarding OKC and talking about how teams are going to lay off of Gideon Dort. I do think it's important to recognize that like Dort is bringing something, especially in a matchup like this, that's really important on the other side. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that even like Cason Wallace, who we really like, good defender, I don't think he can do what Dort does against Anthony Edwards because of the size difference.
Yeah, he's not strong enough. Because, like, I mean, there we talked about this at the draft, that he and Dort have almost like the exact same measurements as far as like height and wingspan. But just like the barrel chest that Dort has, like the strength that he has. I mean, Cason's going to get stronger. I mean, he's one of the youngest guys on the team, if not the youngest guy on the team right now. But yeah, it's going to take some time for him to get there. And Dort, he provides value no matter what. And he always has. But it makes it difficult, though, when on the other side, it's, yeah, we don't need to worry about him at all. Like, let it fly, Dorsius. Let it go, man.
And similar to, he's shooting 12.5% from three over his last five games.
Yeah.
Which, hey, that's as far as I could go back before he started shooting well. So it's not like he's in like some major slump.
Yeah.
But over these last five, it has been truly awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you just, and we did this in their last game, like in their last game, you combined Gideon Dort's shots. Last game, it was 3 for 11 from three.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like half of their 3-point attempts. On Monday night, it was 3 for 13. Like, that is the recipe. Like, if you can get Gideon Dort taking 13 threes, I mean, they only took 35 overall on Monday. You know, most nights, even if one of them, like Giddy, that's the thing about that game. Like, how much more can you really ask of Giddy as a 3-point shooter? Like, he shot 3 of 7.
3 of 7.
You know, like,
that's great.
And I know that he missed 4 straight, but, and he started off 3 of 3. But like at the end of the day, how much, what are you really expecting when it comes to Giddy? Like, he's not going to go 6 of 7 from three.
Yeah.
So for those guys to go 3 for 13, like, I actually don't think that's out of the ordinary. And I think it's going to be hard to expect both of them to be on in terms of shooters every single game.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, this putting Gobert on Giddy, I think we focus a lot on, you know, how it screws up the offense, but it's not just that now Gobert gets to hang around the rim. Like, I do think part of Chet's struggles is that he is now having to attack someone like Jaden McDaniels, which isn't going to be the case with every team. Like, part of the reason why Minnesota is so optimized defensively is not just because Gobert is this amazing rim protector. It's that, okay, now we can ship Jaden McDaniels onto Chet.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty like good matchup for Minnesota too, because when Chet is trying to drive on him, it's not like he said, you know, a lot of times when Chet is on a big center, he has like a speed advantage. Mm-hmm. Like, he can get around those guys. He can, when he attacks a closeout, he can actually get by them and get an open look at the rim. That's just not really happening with Jaden McDaniels.
Yeah.
And because he's on him, Chet's having no effect on Gobert in terms of pulling him away from the rim. And so there's just like this downstream effect of when you put Gobert on Giddy that just causes a lot of problems. And I don't exactly know how you solve that in this particular matchup. I do think there are matchups like Houston, for instance, because they did the same thing and it worked out that one game. I think over a 7-game series, OKC might be able to figure that out, because you're not going to be as scared about getting to the rim and having your rim attempts limited with Şengün at the rim as you are with with Gobert at the rim. You know, it's just it's a totally different conversation. So I don't know what the answer in this particular matchup. I mean, the whole time I'm watching that game, I'm thinking, what if this was game one of round two of the playoffs and this was the result? Like, what adjustments would you make as OKC?
Yeah.
And I do think it would feel reactionary for Mark to like switch up the starting lineup. But then what if you had game two and something similar happened? Like, would he be willing at that point to change something up? And let's say you're on the road, so it's not like you're losing your home games. You're down 0-2. You're coming back to OKC. You've had two games where they're guarding you this way. Like, are you willing at that point to change it up? And that's where I think about it, because one reason I would like to see more looks in the regular season is because I don't actually know what the best starting lineup against Minnesota would be.
Yeah.
Because there really isn't a perfect fit. Like, you're giving up something regardless of who you put in there, you know?
Yeah. To me, if I want like the optimized lineup, I would keep Dort in just to guard Ant, and you just hope that he doesn't go 0-for-7 in the next game. And I would put Isaiah Joe in the game.
See, but then if you do that, now you're like, I mean, the difference in rebounding between Isaiah Joe and Giddey against a team who's huge on the boards.
Isaiah Joe had 2 offensive rebounds in that game.
I love Isaiah Joe.
He literally had the exact same amount of rebounds that Giddey did in that game.
That is 1 game sample size, Andrew, over a 7-game series. Like, I do think, like, the difference in rebounding
in 3 less minutes
would become a major problem.
I just think that you have to, if you're gonna play this way, the rebounding battle is already lost, especially against a team like Minnesota.
I know, but you can lose it more.
I would rather lean in to the way that the Thunder play than try to like figure out what we can do to mitigate the rebounding battle here. You know, they lost the rebounding battle 45-38 in a game where they decided that we would rather play 2 bench players more minutes than Josh Giddey in the game. And like, I'm a Josh Giddey defender. Probably people get annoyed with me with how much I'm defending Josh Giddey. But the spacing that's provided by throwing Isaiah Joe in there, especially like in a playoff series, if you want to like tilt a playoff series, I think you have to like do something that is going to help space the floor for them and allow them to not have those cross matches. Cause then you can't have Rudy or Kat on Joe. You have to put a guard or a wing on him. Like, you absolutely have to.
Yeah.
And that allows them to play more straight up. That allows like the floor to be a little bit more balanced and the floor to be in a place where I think it just makes life easier for guys like Shea and Dub and even Chet, you know, because then Chet is likely to be matched up not with a wing, but with a big. And like, and then that's what you want. You know what I mean? And I get the rebounding stuff. I just think that if you're the Thunder, you've basically like already conceded that. And it needs to be like a team effort on the boards kind of deal. And I know that Josh is their best rebounder. He and Chet are their best rebounders. That's great. He just didn't really affect the boards all that much on Monday. And I could see a world where he just doesn't affect it as much as you would want, especially in a matchup like this. So I don't know. I mean, if you are going to go away from Giddey in any way, I think that like this is why I keep talking about like acquiring a bigger wing, you know, at the deadline. And this is what I've been talking about for weeks now. Because if you are able to get a bigger wing, it makes things a little bit easier, you know, because you watch that game and it's like, man, like who can we actually count on in these moments? You know, it probably would have helped to have just like, could we just have one more guy, you know?
Yeah.
And that's where I just think getting one more guy would be helpful because, and Josh, I don't think Josh, this is not like this would not be like the series for Josh. I think Josh is kind of like turning into this player that I think could play against certain teams where it'd be like, oh yeah, like this is a Josh series. And then there's others where it's like, oh no, like not the Timberwolves, you know, because of the way that they're going to match up against him. So I think,
yeah, I was trying to think of other teams that could do something similar. Because obviously any team can put their center on Giddey.
Yeah.
But as I mentioned, it's not just that. Like, it's if you can put your center on Giddey and you have a big wing who you could put on Chet. So I'm thinking of a team like the Clippers, who Zubat's pretty good rim protector.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could put Paul George on Chet. And I do think that would bother Chet to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you really want to use Paul George on Chet when you could use Paul George on
Dub.
Shea or J-Dub and then have Kawhi on Shea and J-Dub?
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe not, but if you don't do that, now you're having like Terrence Mann or who would be their fifth starter? Oh, James Harden on Chet. I wonder if they would put Harden just because he's thick.
He's thick, that's what you would want if you're the Thunder, though.
Yeah. The problem with the Clippers, like, one, I think they would definitely do that the entire series because Ty Lue, I mean, he kind of perfected that, a lot of that. I think that they're, what scares me about them is the other side, though, like what they can do offensively.
Yeah.
And maybe that goes back to you being more comfortable with Isaiah Joe against the Timberwolves. It's almost like, okay, we have to try to get, we have to make up some of this ground offensively.
Yeah.
And we feel more comfortable doing that because Minnesota isn't this great offensive team. Like, we feel like we can survive against them because we don't feel like they're going to be lighting up the scoreboard in the way that a team like the Clippers probably are night to night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you had Joe in that lineup, what happens? Like, they don't want Shea and Dub and Chet to be the guys to take the shots. They want the other guys to be able to take the shots.
Right.
And if it is Isaiah Joe, I mean, Isaiah Joe had 1-3 the other night. He had one. Like, he needs to have 5, 6, 7 3-point attempts, you know, per game.
Yeah, that is pretty stark that he only took 2 shots and they were a plus 16 in those 16 minutes.
Yeah. He just provides the spacing that you need. And like, that's what you need against Minnesota. It's like, you need some way to get them out of the paint, to spread that defense out. Because what happens is, like, they just like, great, we're going to have basically 4 guys that are just going to be, you know,
tapping
in and out of the paint the entire possession, waiting for Shea and Dub to get to their spots. And they say, like, whatever, Giddy, whatever, Dort, do your thing. And if you can counter that with just like one like lights out 3-point shooter, I think it shifts everything back to the way that you want it. It's such an interesting matchup. Like, it's a really tough matchup for the Thunder, and I think you just need to play more shooters. Even Wiggins, you know, Wiggs was really good against the Wolves. I mean, that's another guy that I would consider playing as a starter.
Also took 1-3.
Only took 1-3. You know, Kenrich, I think they're more willing to leave open than those two guys. And Kenrich had 5 threes and he made 2 of them.
Yeah.
Kenrich is another guy that I think you consider there as like the starter that would bring a little bit more muscle to the table. So I think there's a lot of different directions you could go with it. But I do think that if they did play them in a playoff series, that it would be a tough, Giddy series. And I think you just have to kind of think of things in that way if you're the Thunder. And I don't like you said, game one, they're likely going to give the benefit of the doubt to Josh and make him, you know, make the other team prove that you can't play him. And if they do, then I think you have to adjust. And I think these are the things that we haven't seen yet from Mark and that we haven't seen yet from this team, because they haven't played in a playoff series and they haven't been forced to adjust in a major way. Regular season wise, like, you don't need to change the starting lineup. You just need to keep playing it and see what adjustments you can make. And Mark does make adjustments in game. I mean, we see, you know, Josh's minutes, you know, go up and down all around. Like, we see that happening.
Well, I mean, probably the biggest swing in that game was the first 2 minutes of the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. Where I think the Thunder were a -9 in 2 minutes, and he had put Giddy back in at the beginning of that and took him out like within 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, they'd gone, I think they went to the fourth up, and then they were down by, you know, like 6 or 7 or whatever it was.
Yeah. They were up 4.
And then we're fighting back. Yeah. They're up 4. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. They were up 4. And then when, let's see, where does Shea checked in at like the 9:45 mark? They were up 4, then they were down 5 at the 9:45 mark. And that was early. I mean, usually Shea does not enter the game until like we get closer to like the 6-7 minute mark. And he was like, nope, this is not the game for Josh. And that was just
a killer swing. I mean, 9-point swing in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
After they played so well in the second half of that third quarter.
They did. They were so good. I thought they were.
And like everything was flowing. Like Wiggins was playing a lot of those minutes. Isaiah Joe was playing a lot of those minutes.
Yep.
And everything just looked so much easier for them.
Yeah.
And even at the end of the game, like I give the Timberwolves credit because I was on Dane Moore's podcast. He was talking about how like their end of game play has been, you know, not amazing. It's it's been like one of the things you would look at. And that's kind of what we saw in that last game where OKC was able to close it out on the road. So you have to give Minnesota some credit. But at the same time, I didn't hate the shots that the Thunder got there at the end. Now, I would have liked Shea to get more shots because I think he didn't take a shot from like the 2.5 minute mark until there was the game was basically over with like 10 seconds left. But, you know, they got, and all of these were contested for the most part. I think J-Dubs was probably the most open. But like the three from Chet in the corner, J-Dub took an above the break three, and then Kenrich took an above the break three. I don't think any of those were bad shots. And
that
so
that dub shot was going to be a big one if it went in. Like I think they had a legit chance to win the game, and that's, you know.
So even then, it I didn't watch that being like, okay, they like couldn't solve the Minnesota defense.
Yeah,
like I thought they got good enough shots there at the end. They just didn't make them.
Yeah.
Minnesota took care of business on the other end though, and they were just like as they eventually started to extend that lead. It just felt like, okay, like this is over.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I really feel like that beginning of the fourth quarter is where that game just flipped because they played pretty evenly the rest of the time.
Yeah.
And that 9-point swing was just massive.
Yeah. It was Towns got to the line, hit his 2 free throws. Nickeil Alexander-Walker hit a three. Jordan McLaughlin hit a three. He made all of his shots. He was, and the Thunder were just kind of like daring him to be the guy to beat him. And he was awesome.
Yeah.
And then Towns hit a three. And then it was like, okay. Like, time for Shea to come back in. Yeah. It was rough. It was a really rough start to the fourth where things changed very, very quickly. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it feels like we're talking about this game as if it were a playoff game. You know, because it felt like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they lost.
It's because we've played them so much. It's like game four, you know.
Yeah,
we're tied up 2-2.
Right. It does feel that way. And they only lost by six. You know, like it was just a few shots. It was just like Dort not being 0-for-7. You know, just having a normal night away from being the team that was on top.
When I was talking to Dane, you know, the premise of that episode was like, why is OKC such a tough matchup for Minnesota? But then at the end of the episode, we were both saying like, this could totally flip, like do a 180. Because I mean, OKC easily could have lost that previous game in Minnesota where they made the comeback. And at that point, we would probably be talking about this matchup completely differently. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, we got that one blowout win, but we lost all these other three really close. So It does feel like we've done a 180 and that now it feels like a tough matchup for OKC because of the way they were guarding the starting lineup. Mm-hmm. Because outside of that, I still like feel pretty solid about this matchup.
Yeah.
But that new wrinkle, it does cause a lot of issues. And to Giddy's credit, like it didn't cause a ton of issues at the beginning of that game. Like they were pretty good in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. Yes, if he makes 100% of his threes, like things are going to work out.
It's going to be awesome.
He starts off 3-for-3. Yeah, like if he starts off 3-for-3, they're going to be able to survive those minutes no matter what.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, night to night in the playoffs, you just can't bank on that. And what was important about that game is even when you did get that, it did not change the way they played at all. Yeah. Like I think of like Hack-a-Shaq, where when you foul a guy, usually if he makes like his first 4 free throws, they kind of stop doing it. It's like, all right, well, this obviously isn't worth it. With Giddy, when he made that third three, I was like, okay, like, are they gonna change up or anything? And they really didn't.
No,
they just kept playing, and eventually he started bricking. And then by the end of the game, it like all paid off for them because even though it didn't work out amazing for them in that first quarter, every other stint that he was in, because in fact, that first quarter, they would have been up when he left, and he ends up a minus 17.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's pretty amazing. So those other two stints that he was in the game, two or three stints, like they just got killed in those minutes.
Well, the minus because nine once he's beginning of the fourth,
Yeah, the minus nine, yeah. Because once he's not hitting those threes and went, you know, 0 for 4, it just messes everything up. And then when he's missing those threes, then you start to notice how it's affecting like the other shots that they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just it's a tough one.
Yeah,
I don't know if there's definitely a solution. I mean, I saw some people saying like, why don't you put him in the dunker spot? Like, put him in the dunker spot. Like, Gobert doesn't have to do anything now. Like, he can just hang out right there.
I was gonna say now, Gobert can like you have absolutely neutralized Josh completely at that point. Where at least if he's on the perimeter, he at least has the chance to make a jumper or can make a play. But if you put him in the dunker spot, I mean, they're just going to destroy him.
Yeah, the one play, and you already mentioned it, that was like, oh, okay, here's something, is that play where he went into the middle of the paint and they passed it to him and mm-hmm. he shot that floater over Gobert.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, they're getting him into some different space.
Yeah.
You know, let's just like try to challenge them in other ways.
Yeah.
He missed the shot.
Mm-hmm.
But like that was the only time where it felt like he's not just standing on the perimeter waiting to take some three.
Yeah. It's a difficult situation. And I think Josh for the most part is in a difficult situation for him because he's having to learn how to be an off-ball player. You know.
Well, that's like the crux of this issue.
Yeah.
Is like we saw what player Josh was in his rookie season and his second season.
Yeah.
Like we saw what kind of archetype he is.
Yeah.
Or that he would be in the NBA is not anything close.
There was
to what
literally a
right
press
now.
Conference where Shea, you know, we talked about how like, it's not my plan A because it's like, hey, Josh, this is what Josh is really good at. And
we were all for it at the time because we were like, yeah, if you're going to maximize this guy, you have to put the ball in his hands.
This is how you do it.
And let him direct things.
Yep.
And we are so far removed from that that now it's like we're almost playing him as like a 3-and-D player, which he doesn't really offer either of those,
right?
Because you don't really see the playmaking. And the other thing I wanted to bring up, and of course this is just from some hater account. It was Brick Muse, but they had like this compilation of Josh Giddey passes, and everyone was making fun of it. It was all these passes that were, you know, not good passes. But what stood out to me about that video was how those were all the passes that he was getting to make in his rookie season that were leading to all these highlight plays. And man, you see it now, like teams are ready for Giddey's passes. Like when he tries to throw those cross court passes,
mm-hmm.
it feels like half of the time now someone is waiting to pick it off
mm-hmm.
because they've scouted him so much better than they had his rookie season. And so many of those flashy passes are now turnovers.
Yeah.
In a way that they weren't his rookie season.
Yeah.
Where it was really like, whoa, where'd that come from? I didn't even know he was looking at that guy.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of them in that Wolves game where they just got picked off and it was going the other way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it has been a challenging season for Josh in almost every way, you know, and a lot of it, you know, on the court is like not truly his fault, you know, that he doesn't fit with the way that he's having to play. You know, that's not the way that his game is. And so I don't know. I think he's making the best of a difficult situation for him and has had good games. Like, I thought he played well against the Pelicans, you know.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, and we've said this before, like, when he was at his absolute worst, when he was truly terrible towards the beginning of the season, like in December, the team was still good. They were still winning games.
Yeah.
And when he started playing better, they went on like one of their best runs of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was talking about, that was when we were having the contender conversation.
Yep.
So like this really isn't a regular season thing.
Yeah.
Like they can survive. They could play this starting lineup the rest of the season and probably still end up as a home court advantage team.
Yeah.
Like it's not that kind of an issue. It is specifically when you start talking about what are teams going to do in the playoffs and how is OKC going to respond? Because I do think the majority of teams are going to play this way.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they don't have the optimized defensive lineup to do it, because the trade-offs are just worth it. Like
mm-hmm.
if you can keep more guys in the paint to fend off J-Dub and Shea, it's worth it, no matter what the other consequences are. Mm-hmm. So I think that, and that's one of the reasons why I would like to see them try other starting lineups in the regular season, mm-hmm. just to see what it looks like against more, to get more minutes against first units of other teams.
Yeah.
Because we really just have zero data on that.
Mm-hmm.
And you felt strongly about Joe, but you know, there might be games or there might be matchups where like Kenrich would make more sense, or maybe Wiggins, or maybe even someone like Jay Will, who in his 14 or 16 minutes, I thought he was like pretty solid.
I thought Jay Will was great. Yeah.
His box score doesn't jump out at you, but like in the moment, I thought he was pretty impactful.
Yeah. Yeah. Jay Will was awesome. Yeah. I mean, and if you look at like the lineup data, you know, on cleaning the glass, that starting lineup is still like a plus 6.7, which is like, it's good, not great.
It's good. And you also don't know, half of that might be the Portland game.
I mean, it's 1,000 minutes, though.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, you have the good and the bad all mixed in there. I mean, that's what happens over the course of an NBA season. And the team overall is still a plus 5 with Josh on.
And that's the thing. Like, it's not going to show up there in the same way that, like, when the Grizzlies with Tony Allen, like, those were probably really great lineups in the regular season, too. And then they get to the playoffs and play Golden State, who in my memory is like the first team that like really played this way, where they just completely ignored a player.
Mm-hmm.
And it just threw the Grizzlies for a complete loop.
Mm-hmm.
Like it just completely threw them off their game. And that was a guy who's giving you a ton on the other end, like all defense on the other end. And it still just completely wrecked a team that already wasn't amazing offensively. It made them like truly putrid on offense.
Yeah.
So the in-season stats, like, I think they're going to continue to look great. They're going to continue to look good throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah.
It's just, what do you do in the playoffs if you have a game like this and this is the result? Like, do you just keep going back to it? Or do we see his minutes? Or do we see, like, kind of what we saw in this game, which is you start him, but then very quick trigger the rest of the game?
Well, I think, to me, you look back to stuff they did with Kanter, even, you know, like there were Enes Kanter series and there were series where it was like, nope, can't do it. You know, I think it's probably something like that where they did like change the starting lineup and it was like a different coaching staff, different team, all of that. I get it, but it's still like the same organization, you know, where Kanter started against the Spurs, against like one of, like, the Spurs were like one of the best teams ever that season, the regular season. They were amazing. And the Thunder beat them. And they played two bigs the whole time. And I think there will be series where it's like, the Thunder need Josh. They need his passing, his IQ, his rebounding, you know, his ability to create in transition. They need that. And then if they did play the Timberwolves in round two or something, I think that you would have to turn to Kenrich more. I think you'd have to turn to Wiggins more. You'd have to turn to Isaiah Joe more. And I think you would change the starting lineup because you can't afford to just like start games in the hole or just start games just with a hope and a prayer that Josh is going to make his threes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's really where it ends up. It's like, you know, we obviously all love watching this team. This has been an amazing season so far.
Yeah.
You don't want it to come down to Giddy and Dort's three-point shooting.
Yeah.
And in some respects, it's probably going to come down to, or it's probably going to be impacted by at least one of those guys' three-point shooting because we feel like, you know, they're going to play Dort. And if Dort doesn't have a good series, like, that could happen. But there's just the top three guys. And more recently, like Shea and J-Dub, what they've been doing, they've just been so good. You just want to see that optimized, and you don't want to lose it to something like, you know, Dort shooting or Giddy shooting.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like that's the point of game planning for OKC is to remove all those things that we love so much and that are good, and to give us the things that we hate the most.
That's
things that we don't want to see, like Dort and Giddy taking 13 threes in a game.
That's the playoffs, man. Like, that's the playoffs. It's like, hey, the other team is doing whatever they can to make you do the thing you don't want to do. Like, that's what the playoffs is. And I Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City, with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful, designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son, Evan, continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Man, I love having this conversation because it means that there's like a really good team in Oklahoma City again. Because we can talk about the games and like how much the games matter and how much, you know, rotations and tactics and all of that. I mean, this it's amazing that we're at this point already where we can talk about this. I mean, you know, it feels bad right now. And, you know, this is one of those moments, like you said at the beginning of the show, where like the sky falls on every team, you know, twice a year, whatever, you know, Pressy said, you know, two or three times a year. Like, this is definitely one of those times. But like, you can also step back for a second and see, you know, they're 32-15, 7.9 net rating. You know, one of, like, that's the second, still second best in the NBA. You know, there's only four teams that have a plus six net rating. Knicks, Sixers, Thunder, Celtics are the only teams. You know, they're still fourth in defense overall, fifth in offense. I mean, it's been an incredible season, and like still all the stats point to that this is a one of the best teams in the league. And you know, they're gonna they'll have a chance next week to do something. I don't know for sure that they'll make a move. I don't have any like sourcing or knowledge about, you know, what they could, you know, do or what they're going to do, but I just have like a feeling that this Bertans contract is, I mean, it's very movable. It's something that probably some teams, especially teams, you know, trying to duck the tax or the apron, you know, it would help them do that. And you could get just like I've been saying, like the one more guy. And it doesn't necessarily have to be some guy that's going to come in and play 25 minutes a game. But I would be a little surprised if they kind of let this Bertans contract just expire and not use it. And so I just have a feeling that perhaps they'll do that. And Mike Scotto, shouts to Mike Scotto, put out a piece this morning. And the team that we all talk about all the time is the Brooklyn Nets, being a team that has a lot of role players that teams could use. And, He did note that, sorry to even say this on the pod, at 405 fan on Twitter, that Nick Claxton is somebody that at least they're saying they want to hang on to and pay this summer. So like that's like a Thunder target that, you know, a lot of fans have circled, and it looks like they're going to try to hang on to him. But they did say that a guy like Royce O'Neal could be had for, you know, second round picks. And then he said Dorian Finney-Smith for a rotation player and a first, which I don't know exactly what they mean with a rotation player. Like, what is that? It's a very vague. I mean, Poku could be in a rotation. You could rotate him if you wanted. And a first. And like the more that I watch of like this year's draft, the more I'm just like, hey man, go ahead and hit the eject button on another one of these picks. from this draft. I wouldn't want to have multiple picks in this draft necessarily.
And even though it is a bad draft, you do feel like there should be teams who would just like to have a pick, because so many of these picks are controlled by just a handful of teams.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. I'm just looking through right now, like Indiana doesn't have a pick. Dallas is likely not going to have their pick.
Yeah.
The Clippers obviously won't have a pick. And some of these teams, especially the ones who are like hitting up against, or who will be hitting up against that second apron mm-hmm. next year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, even in a bad draft, it would be nice to have a young, cheap, controllable contract.
Mm-hmm.
Lakers aren't going to have their pick. So there are teams, Golden State, who I think could use a pick.
Yeah.
Well, even in a bad draft.
And they're going to be good players in this draft. They're going to be guys that help. And I think that there are genuinely going to be top 10 picks in this draft that they get to camp and you're like, oh no. like these guys cannot play. You know, I think there's going to be some of that with this draft, that there's going to be lottery picks that they're going to get to camp, and right away it's going to be like, oh boy, oh boy. But, you know, and I guess if you are the Thunder, of all the teams in the league, like, you know, the Thunder are going to put in the work to find like who these guys are. And right now they would have the 12th and the 14th picks.
Now it's 13, Andrew. Is it 13 now? it'd be a coin flip.
Oh, coin. Oh gosh, coin flip.
13. Yeah.
I'm glad I don't have to actually care about the coin flip.
Yeah.
This year.
I mean, I think it is setting up pretty nice for them, because on the one hand, the Clippers are better. So like that pick can be truly a throwaway pick. Like, you know, it's going to be at the end of the first round.
Yeah.
That's probably going to be like 25 or later. Yeah. Right now, the Clippers pick is 25. OKC's is 26.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is that's nice is that the Houston and Utah picks are kind of settling into that late lottery range.
Mm-hmm.
And so even in a bad draft, you would think those would have some decent value on the market, because the Houston pick especially, I mean, we'll see what they do next week, but that feels like it's going to be like between probably 10 and 14.
Yeah.
And then Utah, they've been on a little skid recently, but that kind of feels like that might convey as well as a late lottery pick.
Mm-hmm.
So even in a bad draft, I would be fine if they traded like one of those picks and the Clippers pick to do something.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel the same way. And they could do it at the draft too, you know.
Yeah. So, and that's two firsts. That's two firsts. A lot of people are talking about two firsts. You can go get Alex Caruso, I bet, for that.
You could.
Two firsts.
I want a bigger guy, though. I want a big wing.
Dude, Alex Caruso can guard anyone, Andrew. He was guarding freaking KD.
Sure.
And looking pretty good.
Yeah. Caruso's fine. I just don't want another like low-volume shooter, though.
Well, he'd be high-volume here because the other teams would force him to shoot.
Do you feel comfortable with that?
With Caruso shooting?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, more than any of these other guys we're talking about. I mean, obviously he's having a great season, but he's had like good seasons from three.
Yeah.
His last season, Lakerland, 40%. Then he shot 33% first season in Chicago, then 36%, and now 41% on his highest volume of his career. I mean, he's taking 4.4 threes per game.
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right.
But, I mean, he's straight up better than Dort. He would be an upgrade on Lu Dort today.
Right now.
He would be, Andrew. Don't say he wouldn't be.
I don't know.
He would be.
I don't know.
He's a better player than Dort.
He's a good player.
He's better than Giddey.
He's better than Giddey.
Better than Giddey.
Only three rebounds a game, though.
That's true. He's not a big bounder.
And he's just not very big. That's where I feel a little bit, to me, like I just don't really...
It doesn't matter.
Wouldn't really want to acquire any more small guards.
But he's not... He doesn't play small.
He is small though.
Like, yeah, you can't put him on like Zion, perhaps.
We need a Zion stopper. Get me Alex Caruso.
I think he has more versatility than you're giving him credit for.
Probably so. That's probably true. But I just that wouldn't be the guy for me.
You're gonna be eating some crow next week when they trade for him. Bring him back, reunion.
Dude, I'll be so excited if they trade for him. But like, also, I just
bring
don't.
Back blue legend.
Yeah,
Alex Caruso.
Yeah, I can't believe
Bald Mamba.
They let him
Caruso
slip through their fingers. Alex Caruso. Yeah. Anything else? Any other scuttlebutt that is exciting you? There's not a whole lot going on out there right now.
None of the names that are like none of the big names I think matter in any real way.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be cool to get like a Zach LaVine trade, DeJounte trade.
Yeah.
I just don't think those guys are changing the fortunes of any of the teams that are being talked about with them.
No. When we think about LeBron's hourglass tweet.
What was his hourglass tweet? I didn't even see it. Oh my gosh!
So LeBron just tweeted an hourglass.
Just tweeted.
I mean, not now,
oh my
but
gosh.
He only tweeted. He tweeted with Eight just hours. The emoji of the hourglass. So does it mean time is running out for him? Like, oh, my time is running thin. I'm old. Oh my gosh! When you do a thumbs up, it gives you a thumbs up here on StreamYard. Do you see that?
You know, I started.
Nope. Let's see it. Oh, there it goes. There it goes. You got to hold it. Maybe your thumb is too long for them to recognize it as a thumb. This is why you have to subscribe to our YouTube channel right now. Does it mean that his time's running up, that trade deadline's coming, so time's running up? You got to make a trade. Or my time with the Lakers is almost
up. Oh, and that's your real trade target.
That's your real
LeBron at the four, Chet at the five.
I mean, it'll never, ever, 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 ever happen. Like, they're not going to trade for a 39-year-old. But would it be cool? Yes. What would it take to get LeBron? Just as a, like, fun, throwaway, stupid activity that will never, ever happen.
Well, at that point, they're going to be rebuilding. So they're going to want to be clearing cap space, and they're going to be wanting to collect tradable assets that they can then flip to go grab other guys. So just give them, probably take at least five picks.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too.
And he's an expiring too, right?
I know.
So this is insane.
I know.
But yeah, it's probably insane. Five picks. You can give them Giddey. You can give them Bertans. You actually have to give them Bertans.
I was going to say, you have to
give them Dort too.
Yeah.
Just to make the money work.
Yeah.
So yeah. Dort, Bertans, Giddey, and then throw him Poku in there. I think Lakerland would love him.
Toss a Poku in there.
Yeah. Trey Mann. Us, you think Us is going to start tonight?
Ooh, who will start tonight? Let's say that all the guys that are listed on the injury report are out.
Yeah.
What would be your starting lineup?
So, I mean, Josh is going to be the starter.
Giddey. Giddey at point. Point Giddey. That's the thing that we'll get to see more tonight is more Josh Giddey at point guard.
Did you say Chet would be out too? So this is Chet, Shea, J-Dub, and Dort.
Everybody, guys, right? Yeah, everybody basically okay. But Giddy.
All right, Wiggins.
Giddy.
Wiggins. Isaiah Joe's out. Man, you almost have to play.
No. You probably have to play him, but I don't think you have to start him. So
Giddy, Grayson Wallace.
Yeah.
Wiggins. That's my 1-2-3. And then I'll probably do
Jay Will.
If Jokic plays, Jay Will.
Yeah.
If Jokic does not play, Kenrich at the five.
Yeah.
And then yes, I'm putting Oos because I need him to start five games this year to get my bold prediction correct. So Oos is going to be the starter.
I might throw Vava in there just to spice
Vava and Giddy, that's a bad combo.
Man, they'll be throwing the ball around like crazy. Combo.
Yeah, that's all they'll be doing.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, no, he's got to be our backup point.
Yeah, has to be.
It'll be interesting to see. Shea, Dort, and Chet could still all play tonight. You know,
right?
And if they do, then it's like still, you know, even if Jokic plays, I mean, it's still a game. You know, anytime Shea's in the game, Shea was so impressive. I think that's something that maybe even we'll get a little bit lost because they lost the game and it's kind of ugly at the end. But Shea was incredible in that game. There was one play in particular, and he does this against Jaden McDaniels, and we'll do it against guys that are a little bit bigger than him, is that he stays so low, like keeps his dribble so low, keeps his body so low. And I need to go clip this because it was incredible. But he just kind of slithered through the paint, you know, like almost as low as he could possibly get, and then just like popped up at the rim and like made a layup. It was just like, man. Like, there's not hardly any guys in the league that could do what he did on that play. He was incredible. Trade deadline next week. Scuttlebutt pod next Wednesday. Looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And appreciate you guys listening. Be sure you are subscribed to our YouTube channel if you're listening to this just on the podcast app, Spotify, Apple, whatever. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Hope you guys have an awesome day. We'll talk to you guys again on Friday.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.